Hello, this is the Radio Today programme. I'm Stuart Clarkson, and one of my weekly appointments to listen is Saturday lunchtimes on my BBC local radio station, Radio Leeds in West Yorkshire. So I'm indulging myself on the podcast this week by getting the presenters on, Larry and Paul, to tell us about their career and their very funny videos to promote the show. Also this week, James Cridland is looking at tight targeting and why it works for digital-only stations such as Fix Radio in London. And there's lots of big anniversaries in David Lloyd's Radio Moments this time, including changes at Radio 1 Breakfast, the 25th anniversary of Virgin 1215, and Fox's teary departure from 95.8.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Yes, Larry and Paul are coming up first. We can talk to Radio Today's editor and founder, Roy Martin. Roy, we're on.
Sorry, Stu. Hi, how are you?
Yes, news of a sale for UKRD this week.
Yes, we're in the money. Oh, sorry. Yeah, that was very random, isn't it? Did you see my ramble on e-radio?
I did, yes.
It was basically, what the? It was like the radio festival theme, WTF. Why have they sold Sun FM, Stu?
I've no idea. Surely it makes some money, which would make it attractive to a buyer.
Yeah, but UKRD only sell stations that aren't making any money, normally. So why change? Unless, you know, Sun FM has had a bad year and they've thought, get rid of it. But no, I don't know. Nobody knows.
You've suggested as well in your ramble in eRadio that it might be start of an exit strategy for UKRD. They have disposed of a few over the last year or two. Star Cambridge, Star Northeast, and various others. So
they weren't doing very well. So that's quite clear. But yeah, and I'm told that another sale is imminent as well. There you are, an exclusive for you.
Oh.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens.
We'll keep an eye on that.
With that one.
Yeah. Also, talking of sales this week, the BBC moving into advertising.
Yeah, outside the UK, of course, which is what we need to say, because somebody commented on radio today, one of the many commenters that don't know generally what they're commenting on, said, oh, I'll have my licence fee back, please, then.
Yeah, like, read the whole story, not just the headline.
So why not? If they can make money commercially with their worldwide arm, then why not? What do you think?
I think it's a good idea. This is a tie-up with Acast, the podcast sales company, and there's going to be a 30-second ad at the start of the podcast and a 30-second ad at the end of the podcast.
A deal that's been a long time coming, apparently.
Good news for the BBC, of course, and for us in the UK, is that it provides some funding for making these podcasts, making even more podcasts, which I know is the BBC's strategy at the moment to expand their offer. Investment in the content for that from some advertising from around the world has got to be a good thing.
We'll get even better programmes for us.
And talking of around the world, Christian O'Connell departing for Australia very soon. Still no word on when he's actually leaving the UK. But another great David Lloyd Conversations podcast this week with his youngest subject so far, the OC. And here's a clip of him talking about what life's been like since he made his big announcement about leaving Absolute.
The last couple of months has been really hard for me personally. I'm changing my life in so many ways, unsettling relationship. Every relationship that I have around me has gone through so many seismic shifts and changes over the last couple of months. Mum, Dad, my sister, Richie, the people that listen to the show, myself. And at times it's been really, really hard. I've never had anything like that to deal with in my life. And I guess this is what happens when you make a really big life decision like this, where I'm going, you know, I'm moving to Australia and starting a radio show out there. I've come in and that show has really been a steadying handrail for me. And that, I guess, is what's really unique about radio. Would it be like that if I wrote a column in a newspaper? I don't think so.
And we're looking forward to seeing Christian at the radio festival in a couple of weeks.
Well, I'll give him some slack because in the last few months I've asked his PR people if we can have him for a Radio Academy South event and I've been rejected. So I'm like, but if it's, you know, he just said there, he's going through a tough time at the moment. So I'll give him a break. So if he wants to come down to Bournemouth for an event, back to his old 2CR ground, then come on down. We'll do a Q&A and it'll be fantastic before you go. Otherwise, Carry on.
So Dave Berry coming soon to Absolute Radio Breakfast. Also coming soon, new Radio 2 Drive Time, which starts on the 14th of May. Simon Mayo and Joe Wiley. It's becoming a three-hour show. It'll run 5 till 8 on weeknights. And I think we've just had some information in about the new show, Roy.
Yeah, I'm still not sure about this. I'm going to reserve judgment until I hear the show, but it just doesn't seem to make sense to me. But on the show, we've just been informed that they're going to be doing a new competition called The Best Song Ever. So they're asking listeners to call in and champion what they think is the best song ever. There'll be a brand new quiz to play along with, and there's the lowdown to navigating modern life in Life Hacks. There's also the return of Confessions, which I don't think has gone anywhere. And you can have your phones at the ready for them as the taxi service rolls off the rank. That's the programme information for the new doubleheader Radio 2 Drive Time / Evening Show.
And I think Benedict Cumberbatch is going to be on the first show on the 14th of May as well. Joe Wiley was on the Fortunately podcast this week with Fee and Jane, and she told them about the prospect of presenting a show with a co-host.
It's going to be weird. Yeah, absolutely. We did. We sat down last week in the studio together, and it was like we weren't being churlish. It was just awkward. And Simon will say exactly the same thing. It was just all shades of awkward, because you're just sitting there like, I don't know what to do.
Who's going
to
drive the desk?
We take it in turns, of course, because we're both used to it. It's all we've ever done is drive the desk. You know, it would be so bizarre to not do that. So whether we do it alternate every day, I'm not sure. Whether it's every week, we're going to find out. But I hate doing pilots and practices and all those things. Live radio is the thing, isn't it? I'm not worried, because Simon and I get on, and I really like him, and I laugh at his sense of humour. I love his dry delivery, so I think that will be fine. And in actual fact, when we were doing the pilots, like, we were staggering through these supposed features, which will never see the light of day, I'm sure. But the bits that felt okay were when we were just talking and we were introducing records.
See? They don't even think it's normal. They're unsure. What's going on?
Well, Joe Wiley used to do the evening session on Radio 1 with Steve Lamax. It's not like she's never had a co-host.
I look forward to listening.
Jury's out for Mr. Roy. Let's stay with Radio 2 as well. I've not laughed as much recently as this week listening to Jeremy Vine, Agony Uncle. Did you hear it?
Yeah, I did. I listened to the first sort of 15 minutes and I thought, I know where this is going, and then turned it off. And then I thought, go on, I'll give it a go, and listened to the whole thing and quite enjoyed the whole thing. So especially the travel news, the B-52s, very busy. Very busy on the B-52s.
Yeah, actual Bobby Pryor and actual Jamie Cullum among those joining. Lewis McLeod, who was playing Jeremy Vine, and John Holmes as producer Tim. Here's a bit of a taster if you didn't hear it.
Today on the show, Brexit is being turned into a film starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jennifer Lawrence. Are you looking forward to it? Will you leave the cinema or remain in your seat? At last, there could be military help for Britain's cash-strapped dairy farmers as calls grow for cheese to be weaponized. And we'll meet the man who's reintroducing the saber-toothed tiger to the Yorkshire moors. All that to come, plus travel from Bobby. And as usual, I'll be updating you on my Twitter account, where I've just posted a very amusing photograph of a greengrocer shop window with no fewer than 7 wrong apostrophes. I know. Crazy, hmm? First, though, let's hear from Ed Sheeran. Bobby, what have you got?
Well, first, there's a problem on the B-52. Now, what's happened is there's a car as big as a whale, and that's about to set sail. So it's taking a long time, certainly more than the allotted 15 hours, to get to the Love Shack. To the highway, there's a silver black phantom bike. It was going down the highway like a battering ram and didn't see the sudden curve until it was way too late. The long road out of Eden, it's busy with those escaped eagles.
Hang on, coming to the end of the trail.
We'll also be curling off some clean jazz in this week's Jazzmatazz and laying down some jazz pipes to plumb your ears with some ripe old jazz. And of course, we'll be going through this week's Jazz Max. It's all about the jazz. I'm Jamie Cullum, and I love jazz. Tuesdays from 7 on BBC Radio 2.
Fantastic. Jamie Cullum. I love jazz. Love the brushes. It's BBC Radio 2 with me, Jeremy Vine. Got an owl on the way after the Smiths.
It's just so believable. His voice doing the Vine impressions.
It was fantastic. And the problem is, people tuning in randomly will have thought, what's he talking about now? Because they would have assumed that was him. And it was half believable.
It's a bit like Down the Line used to be on Radio 4. But yeah, I think the owl on the way after the Smiths wasn't actually a parody, because that did happen once on the Jeremy Vine show, crazy as it is. There we are. So have you been up to anything else much this week, radio-wise, Mr. Roy?
Just been working, doing some imaging production for a change, which is nice, because that's what I used to do before I started writing about radio for a living.
Excellent. Well, Roy, you're going to be back with us later in the podcast, the return of Stu versus Roy. Get your geek
I'm
on.
I'm looking forward to kicking your ass for a change.
Yeah. We'll see. But first, let's get this ISDN line dialed up to Larry and Paul, shall we? Hang on, stay there.
Okay, I'll wait here.
Visual radio smarter and cheaper. Virtual director from Broadcast Bionics combines your social media, messaging, photos, audio and videos with intelligent camera control and automated graphics. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
Okay, we are framed and on the line now. You may have seen their online funny videos to promote their radio show. We share them on radio today now and then. Apparently, they have a radio show as well every week on Radio Leeds. It's Larry and Paul. Welcome to the podcast, guys.
Hello. It's a pleasure.
You are doing this radio show in Leeds and you've been doing one for a little while now. Tell us the first story about how you met.
Well, we were at Radio Air.
Is it not called Troubled Radio Air?
Oh, it always has to be Troubled Radio Air. Yes, but number one in its TSA, just around the building. I was there as a newsreader, so this is going back about just over 10 years. Paul was working in the office, incredibly in sales, which is, for anybody who knows him, was remarkable.
I really wanted to get into radio, and I thought the way to do it was to just somehow get into the office. So I was on the street team, desperately trying to get to the attention of Stuart Baldwin, who was the director at the time, and just doing any job in order to try and get behind the microphone, but ending up with all sorts, sales and S&P. And then eventually Larry and I bonded over an article we both hated to a similar degree and thought, hello, we should be friends. This is quality banter. So we decided to get into a studio and just come up with an idea, which became a podcast that we did called the Big Screen Podcast.
Have you heard of podcasts, Stuart? Turns out they're quite a big deal these days.
Yeah.
And at the time, for us, it was like a vehicle to get a radio show, and we should have kept hold of the podcast. But as soon as we got our first radio show, like between midnight and 5 past on a Sunday,
we ditched it like hot vomit.
Yeah, we just got rid of the podcast. So that's sort of the potted history. But it was actually Anthony Gay who put us on air, first of all, who took over from Stuart Baldwin at Radio Air. But Stuart Baldwin was kind of our guy, and we're still friends with him to this day. He's a lovely, lovely man.
Mm-hmm. The podcast, was that you two being as we know you now and being a bit comedy and a bit funny, and that's why it worked? Or was it a straight podcast about films?
No, it was I remember we sat down outside a pub in Leeds called the Adelphi, and we said, what do we both like? And we both narrowed this list down. It was films. And so what we decided to do was to do a review show about films, but do it in a strange way. So we do comedy reviews. I mean, they were essentially like news packages that we produced, weren't they?
Yeah.
And then we did like little comedy shorts, like Yorkshire versions of films, like The Turnimator
and Turnimator.
Yeah. And all these. So it was kind of like a comedy podcast. It was kind of like a precursor to what we did today.
But we put in a huge amount of effort.
Far too much effort.
Way too much effort. Apart from seeing sort of three films a week, and then we would go to these so the studios used to put on these weekend events for regional film reviewers, where you would go to somewhere mad like Nuneaton,
Birmingham,
or Bromsgrove. And for a weekend you would do nothing but watch films, like 21 films over the course of 2 or 3
days. Like Warner Brothers or Universal, or would they take turns paying for it? And you were fed and watered. So the I remember that, like, a Saturday would be like breakfast, film, coffee, film, lunch, film, coffee, film, dinner, film, coffee, film, and that was a day. It was brilliant.
It was amazing. Yeah, looking back, but the podcast was a huge amount of effort. We put in so much production work, but probably, I think we maybe ditched it too soon. But I don't know. It was probably a good training ground for working on audio production, to be honest. I'd done a bit in terms of music, and Paul had done a bit in terms of his DJing work, but it was, yeah, as I say, it was a good training ground, I think.
And people don't realise it's actually quite a lot more effort to put a podcast together than it is to do a live radio show as well sometimes.
Yeah, there's all the fiddly admin afterwards that I always left. I always pretended I was really busy doing something else, and Larry did it, like all the uploading and all this, and then all the tagging and all this naming stuff. I don't know, you have to do lots of stuff I didn't understand.
Well, just editing. I mean, apart from anything else as well, pulling it together. Edits would take a huge amount of time.
Yeah.
You'd sort of record it and you would think that you were being fairly disciplined, and then you'd come to listen to it back and you think, oh, actually, no, get rid of that bit. And then you'd sort of, the next thing you know, it's midnight and you've still not got the thing ready. Yeah, you're right, podcasts are a massive amount of work. Mm. Probably underestimated. That's why there are so many podcasts that you can see online that are just... they're all titled something like Two Guys in a Room, and it is just two guys in a room. Oh, and we're not scripted. Well, there's a reason not to listen.
Yeah. Our podcasts are 3 hours long. Yeah. That's not a good thing. More doesn't necessarily mean better.
Yeah, I'll be up till midnight editing the rubbish out of this with you two probably as well.
Yeah, yeah.
There we are. Oh,
so Ant gave you this chance, and you kind of were thrown together on the air on radio air. Did you just have a bit of a laugh?
No, we pitched a show, I think, originally. It was about the Leeds music scene, wasn't it? And we were, I'm still are adamant about, because you use the term thrown together, which is something I hate. We were friends before we ever decided to sit in a radio studio. So it was kind of, we were like, okay, what do we like? We like movies, but we also like music. So we came up with this idea to have a show that fostered local unsigned artists. And we played some, they ended up, if it wasn't for us, I think we were the first people to play Alt J on the radio, weren't we?
We were. They were called Daljit Dhaliwal.
They were called, and the song was
Matilda.
Matilda.
Yeah, that was their first record, and we were the first people to play them on UK radio.
That's
ding!
Claim to fame.
Yeah. I'd come from Fresh Radio, which I know you know, Stuart, and I'd done a show on Fresh to do with local talent, which nobody else was
talent.
Doing that. And
who makes the best sausages? Sorry, that's down south.
That was a regular feature. Yeah. Don't joke on Fresh. Who does the best sausages? That was all the time. Anyway, so when we came to Radio Air, and I thought there's nothing on Radio Air for local music. I mean, obviously the BBC does it with Introducing, or Raw Talent as it was at the time, and the BBC's always been good at that. But there was nothing on Radio Air celebrating it. So we sort of talked about doing a really locally focused show, because at the time Radio Air was like, we want everything to be local, until we get like all the Londoners on mid-morning and lunchtime.
Yeah,
and or whatever.
The breakfast show came from London four times a week.
So good decisions like that. But yeah, it was a good show, but probably not long for this world, as it wasn't actually.
And you had the day job as well, obviously, doing news for the legend Glenn Pinder, massive in Leeds.
Oh, yeah. That's, I will look back on this career, whatever it is.
And it hasn't formed yet.
Yeah, and I had such fun with Glenn on Magic Breakfast, and it was just almost totally accidental. It was Glenn, and then Loz was his newsreader, which is quite unusual at the time, I think, especially for sort of second strand commercial brands, you know, to have a sort of dedicated newsreader. I had great fun on that show. It was brilliant.
A few years at Radio Air, how did the move to Radio Leeds come about then?
The big British castle. Well, what happened was, speaking frankly, should we speak frankly?
Why not?
We can speak frankly on this podcast.
So we started out on the Sunday night show, and then that was well received. So we were given Saturday afternoons, and then we were given Saturday afternoons and Sunday breakfast, and then we were given some drive cover. And, you know, we were sort of covering a bit. And we thought, hello, this is working in our favour now. And the breakfast show was finishing. And I think Rich Williams was drive at the time as we moved on to breakfast. And just as that happened, Anthony Gay left. And a lovely guy called Ewan McMorrow came in as PD of Air. And I think he wanted someone he knew and trusted in drive as a safe pair of hands, because Rich was new on breakfast. So at that point, we knew that we weren't going to progress any further at Air. And then at that time, coincidentally, a woman called Rosina Breen approached us from BBC Leeds and said, do you want to come and do a demo? So we did, and we enjoyed it, and they liked it, and then they brought us over.
Yeah, and I had to, because I was at the day job at Bauer, so I left that and took a contract with the BBC. So I've been still doing the news stuff ever since. But we didn't start on the Saturday show, funnily enough. The first thing we did on BBC Radio Leeds was to present the breakfast show.
That was weird.
Was really? To do cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the strangest decision in the world.
To be honest, when our career starting off the BBC seemed a little bit square peg round hole. and they wanted something, but what they wanted wasn't us. They were trying everything on The Breakfast Show. I think that's fair to say, wasn't it? They were trying everything. And, you know, when you're having a production meeting, and one of the big watchwords in radio is always authentic, which is, to be honest, a word I hate, but it's something you should always be. You should be true to yourself.
If you have to say it, it's sort of a problem.
Yes,
I think
exactly,
is what you're saying.
Yeah. And there were meetings that we would have after The Breakfast Show, and it was like, okay, Larry, you're good, because obviously you've got journalistic background. I couldn't give a toss about the news, honestly. I think it's far too hyped up and important, and it needs pricking and deflating a bit. It's far too insistent upon itself. Anyway, sorry. So then I'm being told to start to take politicians to task. I'm like, what, me? I'm a fucking idiot. I don't give a toss about gold post boxes or parking or bins. I'm not going to start having to go at a politician. Well, councillor, well, you did suggest in your 2017 fiscal report. I honestly couldn't care. You know, I enjoy entertaining people and making people laugh. And sometimes I cross a line. But one thing I'm not fit for is talking to politicians about parking or bins.
At the time, Radio Leeds was having this thing where they had a 4-day-a-week breakfast show. The weekend started on Friday, like Radio 1 does now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they were trying out different Friday morning breakfast slots, effectively. So loads of different people did it. We did it. Adam Pope did it. Jake Yap did it for a little bit.
Oh, Jake Yap.
And they were sort of mixing things up like that. But before we started, before we took on our Saturday show, because it was Steve White and Jane Sharp before that.
It was, yeah.
Before we took that on, we had this one chance.
There's one shot to get it right.
Having never ever presented a programme like that, either of us, in our lives.
No.
And there, suddenly we're on air and Paul is being asked whether it was a good idea to paint post boxes gold.
I was told
the Royal Mail on.
Yeah,
and
you had to
hold them to account.
About not having enough Paralympic stamps.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Why have you not got the stamps?
I just went all Paxman on him and just go, why haven't you done the stamps?
Ding.
Yeah.
16 times.
So, yeah, and then we got handed this Saturday show, which has just been wonderful and lovely and a blank canvas for us to mess up.
Paul, you trained as an actor, so you almost found yourself acting the role of a local radio presenter then when you were doing that stuff that was a bit out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, I know. I just felt like I felt, not even Partridge, because he didn't have to take anyone to task. I just felt a bit like I wasn't being myself. The reason that I think Larry and I work so well together, whether we sound good or not, is I'm not saying that. We might think we're rubbish. But the reason we work so well is that we're two very different people, albeit kind of quite similar. So Larry has this journalistic background. You know, he's good at handling the serious things. I'm not, and neither do I want to. Sometimes I can do, but that's not who I am. So I don't want to have to play that because it's not true.
But I think
it's
that,
not authentic.
That works both ways. I think Paul pulls me away from my comfort zone quite often to somewhere
into libelous arenas,
and then I have to sort of pull it back, and that's my job. And I think that's quite good fun, the way that we flirt with that line
and with each other.
And our boss always says, "Well, you flirt with that line, but don't cross it."
Who's that?
That's our boss. It's a bad impression.
That's quite accurate. I thought he was in the room now. Everybody's scared.
You mentioned Partridge as well, but I mean, your show now on a Saturday, for anybody who's heard it, you kind of take the mick out of local radio a bit. Does the boss kind of pull you up on that, or is that part of the act?
No, well, yeah, I wouldn't say it's part of the act. I think we do genuinely take the mick out of ourselves, and that's the starting point. That's the conduit into taking the mick out of local radio. We're not just having a go at what other people do on local radio. We're on it, for crying out loud. So, you know, it's not like we could say, oh, you loser who does breakfast at, you know, BBC Coventry, because we've never had a daily show on
the
BBC.
We'd love to do breakfast show
we'd
at BBC
love
Coventry.
To, we'd
I mean,
love
just have
to do
us,
that.
But please.
Yeah. So we are just taking the mick out of ourselves. And although we did, we had our fingers burnt early-ish,
yes,
with Rosina when she was the boss here and now head of news at 5 Live. She told us to stop doing something. We had a character called Gavin Hartshaw, who was a local radio live reporter. You know, the ones that go out and go, oh, it's snowing, look. Snow's white.
Yeah, and everyone's like, we know it's snow. Yeah, exactly.
It's come from the
sky.
Oh,
I'm out here now in the snow. So we decided that this guy, Gavin Hartshaw, would go to like the Heckman White Spoon Festival. Because every Saturday, they always sent them out to the most bizarre things. I'm here. Hi, Colin. Yeah, no, I'm here. And, oh, someone's just thrown a snowball. And so we just came up with this, and we got told off. And told off. Never
stop,
to do that again.
Stop doing that.
We were quite proud of it, to be fair. A bit too close to the bone, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe that was a lesson for us as well, which is sort of fair enough. That's what the boss is there to do, isn't it? To tell you if they think you've crossed the line.
A lot of our podcast listeners might not have heard your show, but I'm trying to listen most weeks, and your Saturday debate or Saturdebate is a bit partridge, isn't it?
Yeah,
completely harsh. Partridge, yeah.
Yeah.
Like the best thing of a thing, and then therefore no local or national radio station can ever ask such an inane question ever again, like, what's the best Jeff? Which, yeah, to be able to get lots of, what is the best Jeff?
Have we done who's the best Jeff? Because we're going to have to do it.
That's Saturday's one now, yeah, sure.
That's sorted.
But Jeff Hurst or Jeff Capes, I think they come up quite
Jeff
high.
Jeff Capes would do quite well. Yeah. But we've done like, what's the best egg? You know, duck won that one.
Duck won. Yeah. We what was last week's?
We did what's the best slide.
What's the best shake was last week's.
The best shake, yeah.
Because of the North Korean, South Korean handshake.
What won it in the end?
Is it the hippie shake?
Was it Rattle and Roll?
Yeah, I think it might have been.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So.
Not even in Stevens.
No, not he even did in quite Stevens well. One, no.
Yeah.
But these are the kind of things that kind of, when they're done by serious people, they get on shit social media and radio. So you're almost parodying that, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's our hope. You had a little online tiff with John Myers, didn't you, Paul? Because, you know, the radio consultant John Myers, who's he's a name that radio people will know. And John had a little dig at one of our fellow presenters who had asked a question on a weekend breakfast programme, which was something like, when have you met somebody famous? But it was done sort of tongue-in-cheek as well. And John had a little pop at him and said, this is why BBC Radio Leeds is so rubbish, or words to that effect.
Mm.
So, Paul, you took him to task.
I did,
with
yeah.
the sort of skills you should have used on that guy from the Royal Mail.
But I just didn't care enough about stamps. For me, like, one of our radio heroes, who's someone who broadcasts firmly with his tongue in his cheek, was Martin Kellner. Is Martin Kellner?
He's still alive at the time.
He asked a wonderful question.
Yes, yeah. Well, he nearly died, didn't he? So we just got used to saying was.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Well, you talk about shit social media and radio. There, I don't know whether it still is their banner, because I haven't visited in a while.
The biscuits.
Well, BBC Radio Leeds, what is your favourite biscuit? Every time I see that, it makes me laugh. Because not only, because obviously I know it's from Martin Kellner, who was asking that with a heavy, heavy layer of irony. But also it sums up a lot of what's wrong with local radio that takes itself a bit too seriously, is that they are literally asking, hey, what sweets do you remember growing up, and all that sort of thing. So we sort of gently rib that.
The problem is it gets the interaction, so people keep doing it, don't they? That's
yeah, I know.
Yeah, and there's a place, to be honest, I think there's a place for it. I mean, you can sit there and be a bit smug. Well, I can sometimes, and just say, well, that's, you know, when things are a bit trite or a bit overused. But there is a place sometimes for asking people, what is their favourite biscuit? Do you not think? I mean, I think if there's a news story, you know, digestives are going to die or something, then maybe there's a place for asking people what their favourite biscuit is.
Mine's a chocolate hobnob.
Exactly. We're discussing it now. Everybody's got an answer. And the thing is, when we discuss like interactive topics, whether we're working together or whether we're doing a solo show, the nub, really what you're trying to get at is, do people have an answer to this question that is going to be semi-interesting to other people? It's not whether, will people text in on that, or have they got an easy answer? It's do they have an answer that's interesting? And I suppose maybe what's your favourite biscuit isn't that, so I've destroyed my own argument.
Excellent.
You know, unless somebody comes up with a new biscuit. What's your new favourite biscuit?
It's always been a chocolate hobnob. Maybe before, when I was eight, it was those pink wafers that aren't really biscuits that come in selection boxes.
Yeah.
But now they're too sweet for my embittered old palate.
Can you still get them?
Yeah.
Excellent.
As well as your radio stuff, you do a comedy slot every month. Does the radio stuff help with that, or does the comedy stuff help with the radio? Do they work together?
They've been slowly merging.
Converging.
Yeah.
That was a lyric, wasn't it?
They've been slowly merging, yeah. They were kind of a bit oil and water, but now as time goes on, we realise that
they're emulsifying.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've written some sketches for radio that suddenly we thought they're not going to work on the radio. Let's film them, and then they've turned into live sketches as well. And we've written some live sketches that we think will probably work for our filmed sketches. And we've done some live stuff now that has featured as a radio sketch, like Brian Blessed's Transcendental Meditation was the last feature to make it to a radio trail, as it was.
Yeah.
That came straight from the live comedy show that we were doing. So there's probably a bit more mixture than there was at the start. We hope there should be more, because lots of this stuff crosses over really nicely. It's just about figuring out how to do it.
And your weekly videos are kind of growing in traction with the views that you're getting as well, which is always good for promoting the show.
It seems to be, yeah. I mean, to be honest, when we started doing them, it started out as just a trail for the radio show. I'm kind of annoyed that we didn't do this sooner, like, because we kept on filming little bits, but they would always be, hi, it's Larry and Paul, we're asking this question today, why don't you text us? And we didn't make the connection between, it doesn't need to be that. We can just do silly videos that say something that just happened to also promote our show. So we started off just doing trailers, wasn't it? We pretend to be late for the show and just do stupid videos. And then, like, okay, well, why don't we expand it a little bit? So I think we have two strands of videos. The first strand is that we sort of do ones about radio and being local radio presenters or being in radio. And then we do ones that are mainly born out of Larry's massive passive-aggressive tendencies. For example, bus drivers
German cars.
Or German car drivers.
Our two most successful videos, so yeah, thanks.
It was Gizzicall before that, though.
Whether they're good promotion or not, I don't know, but certainly in the industry, the videos that we've done in the last 6 months have drawn us more attention than anything we've done on the radio in the last 10 years, which says something about the industry, probably. It certainly says something about the BBC, which I probably won't say what it says. If you don't mind.
There's not many places on the radio, certainly nationally, where a show like the one that you do on Radio Leeds would work. So have you got a kind of career plan for where you want to get to?
We did do. Unfortunately, all the stations that we did want to get to sort of moved on a little bit and evolved and changed a lot. So when we first started, we were like, we were big fans of Hamish and Andy and Adam and Joe, and we listened to a lot of that stuff, and we're like, this is sort of where we want to be going. But the stations like Radio 2 and 6 Music, where we originally planned to end up, have moved on now. You can't get onto Radio 2 unless you're off the telly, and 6 Music won't have you unless you're an aged rock star or a music journalist, which isn't necessarily bad. But it's kind of meant that I'm not sure about whether I speak for Larry, but I don't so much have a career plan anymore. I'm just really enjoying what we're doing. And hopefully at some point someone goes, we like what you do, why don't you come over and do it here?
I think that's the best way to look at it, because it felt like in the dim and distant past of radio that somehow through either the BBC local radio network or somewhere up that gradient, the next Mark and Lard would come, for example. I mean, they were obviously hilarious, but I don't think if Mark and Lard were starting now, I don't think they'd get anywhere in the BBC. Because there doesn't seem to be the processes for those development. Like Paul was saying, Radio 2, it's the station of the stars. It's about the already known names, isn't it? So I think we've probably given up on that idea of the traditional trajectory of progress in the radio industry, which is partly the reason why we do the videos. But I think X is doing, it's doing quite nice stuff. I mean, apparently its figures are quite good with women, even though it feels like it's quite a blokey station when you see the stuff on social media. But fair play to them. They've got, like, you know, Ellis James and John Robbins on. They're not shying away from what a lot of the rest of the industry is shying away from, if you see what I mean. Two blokes, for example, which is obviously particularly sensitive for us.
Well, being two blokes.
Well, the amount of conversations you have, well, you're two blokes, so you do blokey radio. Well, no, that's not true.
No.
It doesn't follow that two blokes do blokey radio. Hamish and Andy are the perfect example. Their shows were just not blokey at all. They might have spoken about blokes' issues, but they weren't blokey. We don't go on air ever and talk about football unless it's to say how much we hate it.
Well, that was all quite serious, and I'm sure the industry loved hearing
it
that. Should we completely spoil that great reputation now by playing our silly quiz?
Why not?
What silly quiz?
Roy Martin is back with us.
Good afternoon, good evening, or good night.
Both.
Or even the morning.
Yes. How are you, Roy?
Very well. How are you two? You doing all right? You sounding good?
Pretty good.
For a change.
Larry just had a lovely rant, which will probably destroy any hope of future broadcasting.
I don't even know what I said. I'm so tired.
I know. I was listening. If you want to know, it's a fig.
A fig roll.
Yes. A fig roll. Yeah, yeah. I did need to know. Yeah. We thought we'd bless you on the quiz with a reappearance of the famed radio air disco jockey Ben Bruce, brother of Ken. who appeared in a quiz that we used to have on Radio Air called Quiz Balls, which was internationally renowned.
It was originally called Quiz Cock, because basically Larry and I had a production meeting where we said, how can we come up with a quiz where the answer to every single question is cock, and the listener just has to say cock on air? It's a way of getting us to say cock. Yeah. Obviously very mature. And we went to our PD, or the assistant PD, was Stuart Morgan at the time, and said, hey, we've got this idea. And he said, no. However, I will accept balls. So it became Quiz Balls. So we basically came up with more outlandish questions to which every answer was balls. And it went down really well on Radio Air. We brought it over to the more highbrow BBC. It was like, yeah, maybe you should.
Can't. After two shows. Paul, do you want to go and get Ben?
I'll go and get Ben. I think he's just waiting outside. Hang on a sec.
Here you come, Ben. God, this takes us back. I go to pretend to open the door, close the door. Here he is, Ben Bruce. Come and sit down. Hello, Ben.
£1,000. Wonderful to be here. There you are. Hello, Tony.
How are you?
Not bad. How are you yourself? You know, yeah, it's been a while since I've been on here.
Roy and Stuart are on the line.
Yeah, hello, Roy. Hello, Terry. How are you doing?
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Ben.
And they want to play a round of radio geekery balls.
Wonderful stuff. For £1,000, is it?
Yeah, no, we don't have £1,000.
Give me £1,000.
Okay, do you want some music?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Wow, wonderful stuff.
So, here's question number one. I think just buzz in when you're ready.
Okay.
Yeah?
If you'll just say your names. Okay, here we go. My old brother Ben does it every day. Sorry, I mean Ken. My old brother Ben, Ken, does it every day. He's quite precise. He must do the business at the same time every day. But in what year did Popmaster start?
Roy.
Roy?
Hang on, Roy.
Is the answer cock?
Aye, that's £1,000.
Hey,
Stu, I'm going to buzz in with a serious answer. I'm going to say 1993.
Oh,
93. And would you like to come up with a second? Oh, hello. Beam me up, Scotty.
Pizza's ready.
Okay, well, that point now goes to... I think that will go to Stu, that point.
Yes, there. Yeah. It was 1996 or 1998, we're not sure. Great, great quiz work.
Okay, question number two. Here we go. I don't know about you, but I like to take four fingers inside me every day. Yes, my obsession with a daily Kit Kat began in 1997. Sometimes I'll splash out on a Freddo, and I'm happy enough if I come across a double-decker. I also like Galaxy chocolate. So I need to know, when and where was the first Galaxy radio station launched?
Right, Bristol, 1997.
Will we accept that?
Well, is it right?
one out of two. I won't say which.
All right, Stu, you have a go.
I'm going to go for Bristol, 1994.
Technically, Stu, you are closest. It was Bristol in 1990.
90?
What?
Wow. Excellent.
Yeah, 1990.
We should have this.
For the people.
Yeah, excellent.
Enough
of that.
2 points for me. Okay. Excellent.
Okay, here we go. Now, this is the final question here. Question number three. I spent quite a lot of time in hospital recently.
Roy.
Mrs. Bruce had quite... Yes, Roy?
Is the answer balls?
It's not balls, no. But you're close. Mrs. Bruce, the reason I was spending a lot of time in hospital is Mrs. Bruce had quite a large self-inflicted axe wound as a result of a run-in with a particularly stubborn prickly elder, which is a large bush, also known as the devil's walking stick. Anyway, while on the ward, we listened to a lot of hospital radio. But in which city did Christopher Moyles begin his hospital radio career?
Roy. Stu. Roy, you were there first again.
Leeds.
No, I'm afraid it's not Leeds.
Wakefield. Stu? Wakefield.
Aye, it's Wakefield!
Oh, that was terrific.
Wonderful stuff. So that I think that leaves Stu as the winner of £1,000.
We don't
well
have
done,
1,000.
Stu.
Excellent. I can quit this
well
silly
done,
podcast
Stu.
Now.
For
what's
2 months.
Silly about this?
Absolutely nothing silly about this podcast. Do you mind if I go and nip out the studio now?
Yeah, Ben. Thanks for
thanks,
coming.
Ben.
In.
Thank
I know
you,
you're
Ben.
Busy. You're busy.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you, boys. Right, me. Thank you, Tony. See you soon. Now,
send Paul
yourself
back in.
Hey, come in, now, boy. cheers, Ken. I'll be in the meantime. Yeah, all right. Oh, God.
All right. How's your break?
Oh, yeah, good, thanks. I have a lovely, lovely finger of fudge.
Yeah, good to see Ben again.
Really good to see him. It's been a while. There we go. Stu wins.
Hooray.
Well done, Stuart.
Thank you for coming on our silly little podcast, boys. And for anybody who hasn't heard you, where can they hear you?
BBC Radio Leeds, Saturday lunchtimes between 12 and 2. But the best thing is just search for Larry and Paul online, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, because all sorts of stuff is on there that you won't find on the air.
Or maybe, who knows, after this podcast, if our bosses are listening, you won't find us on air either.
Exactly. So only online.
Broadcast Bionics, solutions for radio, sponsors the Radio Today programme.
It does. Thank you. A trip down memory lane in a few minutes' time. Stay with us for David Lloyd's Radio Moments coming up. That's after some thoughts on niche radio formats.
At james.crid.land, on the Radio Today podcast, and in your favourite podcast app, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, digital radio brings tight targeting and happy listeners. One of the benefits of digital platforms is that you can launch new niche radio stations there. My daughter goes to sleep listening to a children's radio station on her digital radio, as one example. The programming from Kindling Kids Radio from Sydney is safe and age-appropriate and successfully relaxes her for a good night's rest. Another example is a Chicago startup, Quantum Music, which is running online radio stations for the 7 million Chinese expats who live in North America. There's clearly a need for a station like this, but probably not possible for an FM frequency everywhere. And then in the ultra-competitive market of London, where a typical listener can find over 110 radio stations on their DAB receiver, there's Fix Radio. Ask anyone who's had work done on their home or office recently, and they'll tell you that builders, plumbers, plasterers and the rest are heavy radio listeners right through their workday. Fix Radio, tagline "We're nailing it," is a radio station specifically aimed at builders and tradespeople. The station, available on DAB, online and through an app, has just celebrated its first birthday and is growing both in listenership and in advertising, describing itself as an important platform to the construction industry's biggest brands. Listener marketing, in a city which is often cold and damp, has been well targeted and quite simple. The Bacon Butty Tour consists of brightly coloured vans which drive to building sites across London. They've so far handed out over 20,000 hot butties to promote the station. Craftily, the vans also visit clients too to get their hands all greasy. If the weather is important to the marketing of the station, it's also important content. Detailed weather updates keep outdoor workers informed. Laying concrete in the rain isn't apparently a good plan. And the station's website nicely contains specific weather forecasts for some of London's most busy construction areas. Programming is nicely tailored to the audience who listen long and often to the station. There's a no-repeat guarantee for the music they play, which is all up-tempo. There's daily construction industry news and sports news, lots of music marathons, as well as focused chat in drive-time periods. The station also airs a weekly show with advice on anything from tool thefts to tax advice and doing your own accounts. And as any good station does, it supports a charity that's relevant to its listeners, a construction industry charity in this case. New platforms are essentially making these types of radio stations possible. Station aimed at this type demographic couldn't operate in the limited world of FM spectrum, but with digital, radio stations can target much tighter. Fix Radio seems to be a good example of what you can do with a clear focus on your audience and a digital platform to reach them. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening.
From Luxe to Radio 3, 100 years of history. These are David Lloyd's Radio Moments.
It's 10 years this week since Heart began networking under its new owners Global. At that time, there were just three Heart stations, the West Midlands, London and the East Midlands. 10 hours per day of local programming remained.
This is Heart, London's Heart.
A year later, those station audiences remain stable. The breakfast shows in two of the markets hosted, as now, in London by Jamie Theakston and in Birmingham by Ed James.
Radio I love. It's hard to explain how exciting it is. It's immediate, it's intimate. The relationship with the listener is just a special one and a close one. I still get a buzz. Every single morning I come through that door and I still get such a buzz. I still get a little bit nervous, still get excited. And that's after 11, 12 years of being up at this time in the morning.
Ed James speaking 10 years ago as this station began to network with the other Hearts for the first time, and he's still there. Well done. It's 40 years this week since Noel Edmonds made way for DLT on the Radio 1 Breakfast Show.
Ah, Ah, that one's for me. To Etta Little and Nelson Pigford. And You Take My Heart Away. Double time, 9 minutes before nine. The golden hour this morning with Simon will be way back to 1958. But I have one final duty to perform here, if I can just get the door open. I've got to just check that the cupboard's nice and empty. Norman Stanley Fletcher. Oh, no.
Niall Edmonds ending his 5-year stint on Radio 1 Breakfast this week in 78. Noel had been the programme's second ever host, famously taking over from Tony Blackburn in 73, who'd been none too pleased.
I wasn't particularly helpful to him when he started Radio 1 because I knew he was taking over my breakfast show, which I considered to be mine, and I wanted it to remain that way for some time. So we weren't the greatest of friends.
So you can just imagine those handovers, can't you? 9 o'clock in the morning when Noel Edmonds finishes the breakfast show that Tony Blackburn thinks should still be his, and he hands over to Tony Blackburn.
Don't cry for me, Argentina. And that's Julie Covington. It's exactly 9 o'clock on Radio 1. There we go.
The keys.
Yes, you can plug them into the transmitter and get through to the 9 to 12 cupboard.
They don't fit, these ones.
And they?
No, you got the wrong ones, though.
No, I'm sure they're the right ones, aren't they? Try the long one.
Ah, that's got it.
Well done.
Lovely.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Stand by, take six. The golden
hour. There aren't too many handovers around nowadays, are there? Happy 25th anniversary this week to Britain's second national commercial station. The AM licence, now held by Absolute, took to the air this week in 93 under the Virgin brand.
30 seconds and counting to the radio revolution. 30 seconds and counting to the official launch of Virgin 1215.
Hello to everyone here in Manchester and across the UK. It's 12:15 on Friday, April 30th, 1993, a date which will go down, we hope, in broadcasting history. I'm Richard Branson, and this is the radio station I've always wanted to hear. I hope you'll find it the station you too have always wanted to hear. Virgin 12:15 is now officially on the air!
Well, good afternoon. This is Richard Skinner.
The launch of the first Virgin Radio on the crackly old Radio 3 medium wave frequency, also used before that by Radio 1, a frequency even the BBC didn't want, and now Virgin's successor, Absolute, don't really want it either, as they plan to shut down some of the transmitters. Neil Fox waved farewell to Capital 13 years ago.
London's 95.8 Capital FM. Good afternoon. A beautiful evening in the Capital. This is Foxy on Drive Time with Natalie Imbruglia and Torn. Now, I haven't tried to be over-nostalgic apart from playing great songs from over the years and sort of bringing this up to date.
The station doesn't change. It's still Capital, and let's be honest, it is one of the greatest radio stations on the planet. You know it because you listen to it every single day. And for 18 years, I have loved being part of this every day. And now I need to play a song because this is silly. But
Neil Fox concluding his last show from Capital London this week in 2005. Soap operas on radio have done pretty well over the years, although there were many more in the States than here. That's where they got their name, from the likely sponsors, with Colgate Palmolive sponsoring the first in 1932.
Good morning, radio listeners. Claro, Lou and Dam, brought to you by the makers of Super Suds, the only soap created especially for dishwashing. Soap that dissolves instantly and completely, protecting the smooth white loveliness of your hands. Now, here's a letter from the head of the glove section of a large department store. She says, a woman was trying on a pair of gloves and was dreadfully...
Wonderful. And the commercial mentions there, done as the podcasters do them now, all integrated. In the soaps over here, The Archers began 68 years ago, trialled originally just in the Midlands. There was the Silver Street soap on the Asian Network and Mrs. Dale's Diary, or The Dales, on the Light Programme and Radio 2 from 1948 to 69.
Oh, I'm so happy. First Gwen's engagement, now this.
On Radio 4 in the late 80s, you had Citizens, and Westway lasted 8 years on the World Service, tales of life and love in a West London medical centre. Margaret Sampson was a doctor who ran a refugee drop-in centre in her spare time. And on commercial radio, many of the early stations in the 70s promised a local soap, and Capital had Honey Adair.
Honey Adair.
Here we are then, Mr. Dare.
from information received.
Oh, lovely words, George.
Straight from the copper's Bible.
Oh, well, you should know, George Benbow.
Old habits die hard.
But this week, 49 years ago, a new soap arrived on a very different radio too.
You're in tune with Radio 2 on 1500 metres and VHF. 4:30. Of course, that means it's time for Wagoner's Walk.
There have been a good many changes in Wagoner's Walk since the 18th century, when the men who gave their name to the walk paused on the way up the hill to Hampstead to refresh their horses at the trough and themselves at the inn. Of course, not many of the inhabitants are Londoners by birth. Most have come from all corners of the country to live and work here. Like the girl who's just stepped out of the taxi in this, the first episode called Moving Pictures.
Thanks a lot. Keep the change.
Oh, thank you, miss. Must have been some party.
It was.
The first Wagoner's Walk, broadcast on Radio 2 this week in 1969. It ran daily for 11 years. So, with Radio Derby launching this week 47 years ago...
The Derby Ram, played by the Derby Concert Orchestra, welcomes you to this...
Dave Lee Travers starting Radio 1 Breakfast 40 years ago...
Ah, how dare you!
The new BBC studios at Savoy Hill officially opening 95 years ago...
And it was realised that broadcasting would have to be controlled by one broadcasting authority if the chaos, which today is so obvious in America... where to be avoided here.
And the UK's first FM transmitters switched on 63 years ago. Not very much on, though. Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments! Thank you this week to David Lloyd, James Cridland and Roy Martin, as always, and to Larry Budd and Paul Dunphy. Check them out on a Saturday lunchtime on BBC Radio Leeds. Trevor Dan is back for the May edition of the Radio Today Roundtable Industry Discussion. That's on next week's podcast.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.